Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and today we bring you a cheesy program.
Yeah, what do we do? Say cheese, please, right?
Say cheese, indeed.
It turns out that the U.S. portion of the world of cheese all descended on our hometown of Pittsburgh just a couple of weeks ago.
And they loved it, by the way, cheesemakers I've talked to since.
Well, we did a good job hospitality-wise, I think.
Yeah, and they love the town. They said, some of them said they'd like to have more time in Pittsburgh just to look around and see what's going on. But they were, it was a packed conference with educational programs and 2,000 cheeses to sample and one thing right after another. It was a big deal.
And it was very loud.
It was very loud.
Very, very loud. But you know your old friends from On the Menu. We managed nevertheless to record and edit three typical contestants.
Yeah, and you'll be able to tell which ones were right live in the cheese tasting room.
Well, yeah. Well, they're all three in the cheese tasting room.
Right,
it turns out. And so who did we have, sweetheart? You have the papers in front of you there?
Yeah, we have, let's see here. Just make sure that we titled this. It's the American Cheese Society's annual conference, which is sort of like the Oscars of the cheese world.
Yes.
And it's a big, big deal. There's judging that takes place for 2 days, and they have a really rigorous process. And all the cheesemakers turn out from across the country.
You bet they
Even
do.
From Canada, we have some.
And some of them have different jobs besides making cheese, as you'll find out.
That I thought that was really interesting.
So who've we got?
Well, we're
going to play them back to back.
David Jamblon's Tamales Farmstead Creamery.
Right.
Kendall Russell. From Lark's Meadow Farms.
Yeah, he's from Idaho. I didn't know they made cheese in Idaho. Surprise to everybody.
And then Catherine Spann from Prodigal Farm, who was very interesting.
We're going to play them back to back for you, so
yes.
Listen carefully. Hello, David. Welcome to On the Menu Radio.
Oh, thank you so much. It's nice to be on your show.
And you're here with about 1,005 cheesemakers?
That's correct. This year's American Cheese Society has almost 1,500 attendees, I believe. And we're here mostly on we are a farmstead creamery in Western, in California, in West Marin, about 60 miles north of the Golden Gate.
How about a really brief elevator speech about what's so wonderful about your cheese?
Right. Well, what's so wonderful about our cheese is that we are right down to the basics. We are farmstead, meaning we control the production from the grass up. We have mixed milk cheeses, which is very unusual, only a couple farms in America doing it. And we're making organic pastured goat, sheep, and cow blended cheeses. And soft ripened Arobiola style cheeses that really are blowing the European cheeses out of the water now.
It tastes good. That's good.
Yeah, it's really good. Super irresistible, and we make soft, ripened, and hard cheeses, and are having a lot of fun doing it.
And how long have you done this for?
We've had the farm for over 15 years, cleaned it all up, certified it organic, et cetera, and then we've been doing the cheese for the last 5 years. And we've been very fortunate to have an amazing team that we built, and cheesemakers, and farmers, and our a whole dairy crew, and honestly have been blessed by winning Good Food Awards and American Cheese Society Awards over the last 3 to 5 years.
What did you do before you farmed?
Well, I still have a few day jobs. I'm actually a cardiac surgeon by day. I clone genes at night. We start biotech companies. And, I run the program at UCSF.
Cheesemakers and chocolatiers. I knew I'd get a wonderful response from that.
Most people think it's crazy, and it's ironic sometimes. When I do the deliveries late at night, because we're a small shop, I go to the back, to the back through these high-end French restaurants, open the cooler and said, oh, damn, I have to go back. And I took the wrong cooler. I have to take the heart back and then bring the cheese,
Oh, you're wonderful. Thanks for, I know you're busy. You're really busy.
No, nice to
meet
you both.
And we'll catch up with you later on the conference.
Anne says, that's fabulous. Kendall, what is it?
That is a Poco Rojo. It's a Revolution-style sheep milk cheese made with thistle rennet. My daughters helped me make it. I've got a 10-year-old and a 9-year-old, Virginia and Eleanor, that helped make the cheese.
And you're in what is not exactly front and center cheese-making state in the United States, are you?
No one realizes it, but Idaho is actually the third largest dairy state in the country, but everything's very, very quiet out here.
And are you, as they say, farmstead? I mean, do you have all your animals?
All the sheep milk cheeses we make are farmstead. We do our own milking, raise our own pasture, cut our own hay. So start to finish, grass, sunshine, sweat.
What made you start this as a career? I mean, it's not the first thing that would spring to mind.
Well, when you're desperate when you leave dental school because it doesn't work out and you've got a microbiology degree, you go with what you know, and it was microbiology and cheese.
We asked the founder of Cypress Grove once, why did you start making goat cheese? And she said, I was a single mother with three children.
Yeah, we kind of felt the same way. It was much, much more complicated than we ever thought. It was simple when it was small, but not so much now.
Now, was farming in the family, Kendall?
Well, ironically, I think farming's in everyone's family if you go back two generations. But no, my dad's side of the family are all doctors or PhDs, and no one did farming.
It sounds like you're set for several generations to come.
I hope so. I hope so. We're trying to set up a legacy.
And you undoubtedly are going to have another thing to go. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 roles that you play with little stick-ons.
Well, we wear a lot of hats on the farm. We definitely do. We, you know, father, mother, cheesemaker, milker, manager, shipper, marketer. Yeah, it's a lot.
Well, we hope you're enjoying your visit to our hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you'll tell everybody what a great place it is.
It's absolutely been wonderful. I look forward to coming back.
Now, Catherine Spann is going to tell us all about Prodigal Farm cheese. What are they outstanding? You know, tick off the characteristics of your cheese. You're from Norham, North Carolina, which is a beautiful place.
Yes, we have an animal welfare approved pasture-based goat dairy, and we also make cow's milk cheeses with milk from another pasture-based cow dairy. And we try to do really out-of-the-box cheeses, sort of slightly outrageous. So we brought Spring Fever with us, which is a
lush. What do you mean out of the box? What do you mean? I was going to ask you who named them, but you say that the quality, the characteristics of the cheese are also out of the box.
So we're trying to do really innovative cheeses that don't have much in the way of established precedent. So like we've got this lactic paste cow's milk cheese named Spring Fever that's sort of an effervescent paste and like lemon curd meets whipped butter meets fairy dust, as I like to say. And then Rowdy Gentleman is a sour beer washed rind goat's milk cheese that uses naturally occurring Brevibacterium linens. And so there's just, I like to think that there's three layers of terroir in there, because again, we're pasture-based. We're using a locally produced sour beer and naturally occurring Brevibacterium linens. So there's a true sense of place in that.
What's in Dirty Girl?
Dirty Girl is a mixed cow and goat milk cheese. So I think that the goat milk sort of provides the structure. You know, I think of it mixing milks in a cheese a lot like mixing grapes in a wine. You know, and so with the Jersey milk, you get this roundness and richness. And the goat's milk provides sort of structure and elegance in my book. And Dirty Girl was actually featured in a New York Times article on feminist cheese, which I thought was lovely.
So, have you always been on a farm, or what did you do before you took up farming?
Even though my family has been from that area for 300 years, I went and practiced law for 12 years before I got me being the prodigal daughter.
A little different from, we've interviewed two previous MDs.
we have a lot of connections with the medical community in our area, too, which is lovely.
So. Well, it is a pleasure seeing you doing so well, and your cheeses are delicious because I've been gobbling them all up.
And, I'm honored. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm really pleased to meet you. Maybe we could have a longer conversation later.
That would be a lot of fun. Thank you for stopping and speaking with us.
Yes, you're perfectly correct. The cheesemakers in large numbers are a noisy lot. but I'm glad we were able to bring you some of them. And these are typical of the enthusiasm that is one of the reasons why American cheesemaking has been so successful in the last several years.
Now, some of the noise came from the happy consumers, too.
Yeah, right. That's true. Also the happy consumers. Anyway, we'll be back with more American cheese right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Next, we're going to be talking to Peggy Smith, Dynamic Cowgirl Creamery pair. And she has a really nice perspective on it. She was not first wave, but second wave developing American cheese, and she's very savvy, and it was a good talk. So here we go with Peggy Smith, Cowgirl Creamery. You know, I feel like I've known you for a million years, Peggy Smith. And we would have actually had your partner, Sue Conley, on if we had done this yesterday, because she has a conflict. But your Cowgirl Creamery is legendary at this point. I mean, I don't know if you ever thought it would get to be this significant, but how did you get started on this?
And Sue does regret that she's not on the call. But how we got started was both Sue and I were cooks, and we'd cooked for a long time. I worked at Chez Panisse for 17 years, and Sue had a restaurant in Berkeley called Betty's Ocean View Diner. And both places were really very specific about the ingredients they used, and we always tried to seek out wonderful growers and producers and work with their product and try not to change it too much, you know, really showcase what they did. So when Albert Strauss, who was a friend of Sue's, transitioned his dairy to organic, we thought, well, maybe this would be great to just highlight the milk that Albert was producing and make some fresh organic cheeses and have a little kitchen where we produced food to go out into the Point Reyes National Seashore Park that was made from all local ingredients.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we got started.
And the year was?
The year was, we started the project in 94 and we opened in 97.
I see, so.
Now, you must have been near neighbors of the Point Reyes Cheese Company then.
Well, they hadn't started yet.
They hadn't started yet, okay.
So you were an early entry into this cheese, American cheese making.
Right. Well, we were kind of the second wave, you know, Mary Keene from Cypress Grove.
That's right, Cypress Grove would be first
and
wave.
Jennifer from Redwood, and Laura Chanel from.
Oh, Laura, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, all the people on the East Coast. And Ig Vella from Sonoma with Vella Cheese Company. So there were some really, Bellwether Farms, there were some really good role models that we had to follow. But it wasn't the explosion that we've seen on the scene now.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the membership is, but I remember interviewing Alison Hooper around the time that the ACS was founded. And
yeah.
It was very small. It was viewed as sort of a very minor undertaking. And now look at the size of it.
I know. They were, you know, very eccentric, that group that started the American Cheese Society.
Yes.
In a good way. And, you know, it was all about cheese making. And, it has exploded. I know that when Sue and I first joined the American Cheese Society at the Festival of Cheese, there were probably about 150 cheeses entered. And, you know, now we have over 1,800 cheeses.
Yeah.
And that's just how fast it's grown.
Yes, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have a sense of esprit with all these other cheese makers, I know.
Yes,
And it's good to have that focal point, isn't it, with the society?
Oh, it's so great. I feel like the cheese community, for the most part, I would say 99.9% of the cheese makers that I know are very collaborative and supportive of everyone else. And I think that's really helped with innovation, and it's also helped just to keep it moving along so well.
And now, let's see. Can you just sort of do a brief elevator spiel on your products?
Sure. We make fresh cheese, and we only work with three dairies, and the dairies are specific to different cheeses. So we make fresh cheese, we make cottage cheese and fromage blanc and creme fraiche. And then we make some bloomy-age cheeses that are, we make one that triple creme called Mount Tam and a washed rind triple creme called Red Hawk. Mm-hmm. And then we make a cooking cheese called Wagon Wheel. It's a good snacking cheese. A little one called Hop Along, which is a snacking cheese. And then we make seasonal cheeses that every quarter we change the cheese, and the idea is that the rind really accentuates the flavors of the milk as it changes seasonally.
Right. And this was all very advanced thinking at the time you were starting, really. It's amazing.
Well, we had Sue and I were lucky we got to travel to Europe frequently, and there was some really good inspiration in France and Italy and Germany and Switzerland. So,
oh, yeah.
And I must say England, because we love those Niels Jarre.
I should hope so.
Yes, love those.
Yeah, we interviewed the buyer for Niels Jarre.
Yeah, the Niels Jarre people are just—they're really just amazing.
They did a book, didn't they?
Yes, yeah.
We interviewed the
Percivals.
Yeah, Percivals.
Bronwyn did a book.
Yes,
right.
And
right.
And Niels Jarre is actually one of the big inspirations for the way that we patterned our business model, with doing a little distribution, production, and really working with other cheesemakers to promote them as well as our own.
Right.
What Niels Jarre did, when it was amazing, is they made it possible for farmers to concentrate on making good cheese, and took all the other risk away.
Exactly.
By saying, we'll as soon as you're done with it, we'll buy it and we'll affinage it, and we'll do everything else that needs done, and you just get the money.
Exactly. I think, you know, Randolph's real ambition was to help save the traditional cheeses of England. The person that was his inspiration, his name has really escaped. Oh, Patrick Rance.
Okay.
Wrote a really great book on traditional English cheeses, and it inspired Randolph in a way that he sought out those cheeses and and help promote them again, because it really, the cheesemaking industry in England really changed after the war, and he was really afraid they were going to lose those traditional cheeses.
And they could. They could have lost them.
Could easily,
yeah.
Could,
oh, yes.
Could easily have done.
Yeah, in
yes.
fact, yeah. So,
I remember what wartime cheese tasted like.
Oh, really?
Oh gosh.
Was it rationed?
It was. It was orange, and it came from Canada mostly.
Oh, really?
And, yes, it was rationed,
oh,
along with everything else.
I still. Yeah. Well, I remember those, the oil and margarine stuff.
Right. That's not. Oh, let's not go there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. That's a gross.
With a little capsule in it. That's color. Oh, that was awful.
That's an ugly word. We're talking about a noble dairy product. We're not talking about rubbish.
Yes. Exactly.
My one bit of trivia that I keep offering up to cheesemakers is, what's the world famous cheese of France?
Well, there are plenty, but are you talking about
Brie? I'm talking about butter, not cheese.
Oh, butter!
Disney.
Uh-huh.
Disney is the origin for, in this current form, Disney. That's where Disney came from.
Oh, really?
From the butter, yes. I mean, originally from the French. I mean,
oh, wow.
That's what the Disney family connection to the name is. Anyhow, I'm not expressing that very well. I better skip that one. Let's move on. You grew and you grew, you grew. And then you did something that's happening quite a lot in a lot of industries, not just cheese, but a lot of artisanal industries. Chocolate is another example. You got bought out by a major force in the cheese world, Emmy. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And it was something that is noticed as a trend now, this consolidation within the cheese industry. So it seems like you start out small, you build your product, your brand, and then somebody moves in and buys you out. But basically, it's how you transition your brand that makes the difference. So you and I were talking about Mary Keane.
Yes.
And how she has, she has how would you describe it, creative spirit?
I would say she has an incredible creative spirit and very entrepreneurial.
Uh-huh.
And, I think having that kind of focus of starting a business that really is more about community than about making money. And I think that a lot of us started the same way, where I'm passionate about organic and about saving agricultural land in our community. And this was a little bit of a spinoff from, wanting to help work on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mary was really concerned about the community and making a good product that was healthy and teaching people how a good way of raising goats and treating them and showcasing that you can make a really delicious product while doing all of those other things as well.
Now, how will this purchase affect Cowgirl Creamery? What is your transition plan?
Well, we were acquired 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And Sue and I still run the company, and we still have the same team that we had before the acquisition. And one of the things that made this comfortable for us was watching Cypress Grove, because they had been acquired 6 years prior.
Right, it's been that long. Oh.
Yeah, so it gave us a good window into how dramatic a change would be to our company. And the thing was, Mary said, we haven't really changed. We have the same principles, and The thing that has changed is it's given us an opportunity to produce more and also to build a really beautiful creamery as well as a dairy, a beautiful dairy
okay.
that they have. So with that kind of opportunity and with her being really happy with the transition and giving allowing people within the company to have more opportunity, she was convincing to us. So I feel that with our transition, and I know what you're talking about, with a lot of companies changing, and this is a side note, but I feel like a lot of the people that were entrepreneurial in food businesses were kind of in the same age range. And I'm 65 right now and mm-hmm. know that I probably can't lead this company as long as I would like to and do it as effectively as I can with the way things are changing now. And Sue and I thought, well, this is a good time for us to find somebody to help us transition our company so that it can maintain with the same team doing, making good cheese and selling other people's cheese and employing as many people as we do, but still moving forward in a progressive way about maintaining our values. And so in looking and people looking at us, we really were happy to be able to work with Emmy.
Well, that's really great. Yeah, it's a very inspiring story. And you're going to be coming to Pittsburgh, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
Yes.
So maybe we'll touch base and say hello.
I would love that.
Great. So,
yeah.
Good luck on the competition.
And thank you.
Yeah, and good luck on this the new expanded Cowgirl Creamery.
Oh, thank you.
And I wish you the best.
Thank you, Ann. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Peggy.
All right. See you next week.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Next up, it was really interesting talking to Katie Furman from LeClaire Farms because they recently merged with two other cheese companies to form a much larger operation, which has some significant advantages. Although it is an issue, the consolidation in the cheese industry. But
it's kind of like a next wave that's going on with American cheesemaking, which we'll watch with interest, right?
So yes, that? And so Katie has her finger on it because she just did it. So
yeah,
here we go. Katie Furman.
What's the name of her cheese company?
LeClaire Farms. We're talking to Katie Furman of LeClaire Farms. Actually, that's not the correct name, is it? It's LeClaire.
Claire Family Creamery.
And you make cheese, but you also
yes.
make some other things, too. Like, I think your yogurt is very highly valued.
Yes, yes. We've been doing a lot of different things. So we make cheese, we make yogurt, and we bottle milk.
You're in Wisconsin, and you came recommended to us as an interview preceding and helping to promote the annual American Cheese Society meeting, the annual meeting, which is this year in Pittsburgh, which is where we broadcast from. But part of the highlights that were suggested about how special, because there are lots and lots of national cheesemakers, but one of the things is that you are the fifth generation family run, you are a fifth generation family run business, right?
We are, so that would, I think you have that with Lamagna, they are, which is our sister company, but I am first generation cheesemaker and technically second generation on the farm, and right now that my brother and my sisters, we run the operation with our entire organization, but we're second generation.
So you truly are the family Leclerc.
We are the family, yes. That's right.
And you started out when? I mean, you have a history that overlaps with your sister, what would we call them, that you just merged with company.
Yes. So we began in 1978. My parents started our farm with two goats on it, and my parents had been pioneers in the dairy goat industry, spending the last several years working in conjunction with, I guess, everybody in the U.S. to build the U.S. goat industry. So back in 1978, when they bought the farm with two goats on it, they didn't really know where the ride was going to take them, but they embraced it, and it's been quite a journey.
Now, yeah, that's interesting because Wisconsin, of course, is known for dairy, but the dairy usually comes from cows. So it's something a little different.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that was part of it, too, when we started with goats. And we still get some of that today, that, oh, your goat, So, you know, but it is amazing how much that has changed in the last, 40 years, but really in the last 10 to 15 years that it has just absolutely exploded and changed, and it's really exciting to see where the dairy goat industry is going to go. And I think being in Wisconsin, that's something that is a huge benefit for us, is because we already have the dairy infrastructure that we've been able to grow it because we've been able to grow so much in the dairy goat industry because of the infrastructure that has been built by the cow industry. And as things change in the cow industry, I think it continues to create more opportunity for the goat industry.
It's interesting. You probably know Mary Keene from Cypress Grove.
Yes, I'm familiar with her.
Yeah, we asked her once, why did she get into the goat cheese business? And she started out saying, well, I was a single mother with two children.
This merger thing. So we clear up any kind of misunderstanding here. It's three different creameries.
Yes.
Merged to form Mosaic Meadows, which is the...
So what it is it is a food group. We all keep our own identity, and kind of how Leclerc became a piece of this was about three and a half years ago, we were looking for milk, and the owner of Mosaic Meadows was very interested in getting into goats, and he is very, very good at milking cows.
Uh-huh.
And so we had talked to them about the opportunity of working with them in bringing us the milk piece of it, and he was very interested in that. And then he really wanted to build a food group, so have different food companies, cheese companies primarily, all come together and operate under an umbrella, kind of, but being able to give some of these smaller companies opportunities to be able to build their brands, create great things like they were creating, but not have such a financial burden. So like with the marketing and the sales and the administrative piece, and even when you get into some of the food safety stuff, so you have like your SQF audit, you have that kind of stuff. We can make products all under the same roof. We can market and sell products all together with the same team, and not have those financial burdens of if each company has to do that themselves. Mm-hmm. And then plus, to be of a size, to be competitive too, a lot of times when you're the smaller cheese company, your cheesemaker is also your salesperson, is also your, you know, QA,
right,
is also,
yeah,
you know, all of those pieces. So being able to work together as a team and collaborate on a lot of those efforts, but then keep your own brand and your own identity that you've worked so hard to build. So it's, as a merger, it's, you know, it's a food group that the organization is developing. So right now there's 3 companies in the food group and looking to grow more and be able to offer some different products and stuff. So.
But you all still retain your artisanal status in making these products.
That's right. Yep. Yep. And that's really, I think, really, really important because it keeps the identity of what people have, what we as a family for LeClaire, what we have built, and what we, like, people have grown to know our brand and have an expectation for our brand that it's not just okay. Like, if it's not the best, then we better get on our game and make sure it is the best.
Well,
so.
you are much respected in the industry. And what, tell us what products you make again. Do you do goat butter? That's my favorite thing.
Well, actually, something that's really exciting is my mom is actually working on her butter's maker's license.
Oh,
and because we really want to be able to offer goat milk butter, it hasn't been something that we've been able to do. And being in the state of Wisconsin, you have to have a license to make butter. So the person making the butter has to be a licensed butter maker. So she is working on that right now. And it is something that we are currently working on. It's not not a product we offer today, but it is definitely something we're working on. And then also we make cheese, and we're making like between 10 and 15 different types of cheese, like varieties of cheese, but they're not all different types of cheese. So like we make a raw and a pasteurized goat cheddar, you know, so that's a cheddar, but I count it as 2 cheeses because they are 2 different cheeses. We do jack. We make some goat mozzarella, some of that kind of stuff. But really the cheeses that have put us on the map is our Evelyn, which is an aged goat cheese patterned after a Gouda with a little bit of Parmesan, Asiago-type flavor profile.
Wow.
And that was something that was really a foresight, I think, of my parents, that when we were starting to get into cheese, they had talked to a lot of different cheesemongers, a lot of different people in the industry, and they were like, do not make another fresh goat cheese. Everybody's making fresh goat cheese. That market is saturated, and if you want to, you know, come into the market and be known, you know, don't start with a fresh goat cheese. So that was something, and kind of the fun tie back to Saxon is that we started renting out their vat to make cheese when we first started. Actually, they started making cheese for us. That team is no longer there, but when we started with Saxon, that's where I started making cheese.
No, that's Saxon. For clarification, yeah. Saxon is a third partner in this food group, right?
Exactly.
Saxon, and LaMagna, which is in Pennsylvania, actually.
Exactly, yep. They're actually in Pittsburgh, yep.
Yep. That's why I knew them. I grew up with them.
They make ricotta, right?
Yeah, they do.
Exactly, yep. Yep, and they've been making it for 5 generations. 5 generations of ricotta cheese making. And then Saxon is very close to LeClaire, in Wisconsin, northeast Wisconsin. And yeah, so that's where we started out actually making cheese. That's where I learned how to make cheese. That's where, you know, my foundation was set with the cheese making. And the plant manager there at the time, he's still a very, very close friend of mine. And he's actually on the ice cream side of the dairy industry. And but it's just kind of neat how life goes full circle.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is Peter. I may be asking a question that's redundant, but I did want to ask you, because there's a distinction, I guess, in the cheese business between making cheese and making cheese called homestead, where in the case that it's called homestead because you make all the milk that goes into the cheese yourselves. Now, are you homestead in that category?
So, yes, we are, but the only cheese that that is the homestead or the farmstead-style cheese is our LeClaire Farms Evelyn.
Okay.
That cheese, We use our milk.
Okay.
And only our milk, and we milk the goats right on the farm, and then literally pump the milk through the wall, and it goes into the creamery. It is a raw milk cheese. We do heat treat it. So if there's any, it kills off most of the bad bacteria. And then we age it for the 60 days for all the food safety regulations and stuff like that. But it is truly a raw milk cheese, and it is a farmstead cheese that we make. And it's our signature cheese at LeClaire. It's 100% goat milk, and we've been making that cheese since day one.
Okay. Now, you participate in even international competitions, right?
Yes.
I read where in one world cheese competition, you're the youngest person, and you told me how old you're in your 20s, right, to receive this award. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so back in 2011 with our Evelyn, we won Best of Show at the U.S. Cheese Championships. So out of 1,604 different cheeses, Evelyn was number one at that contest, which is really, really exciting. And then we've continued to make high-quality Evelyn. I mean, you know, the difficult part with Evelyn or with cheese in general is it's a living, growing, breathing thing, and you're dealing with something that's changing, milk, every day, you know, all of those kinds of things. So it really, really is important for the team to be paying attention to everything that's happening around us. The environment affects the cheese so much. So with the Evelyn, we've also been in the top 16 at the world competition. We've won best of class with Evelyn at the world competition. We've won multiple times best of class at the U.S. Cheese Championships, and also been in the top. Well, this year it was the top 20. Now they moved it to the top 20 instead of the top 16. So, but multiple times that we've been in that ranking with our Evelyn. So it's pretty exciting, and it's really a great recognition.
Now, what got us started talking to you was the annual American Cheese Society meeting. You're active in this society. What does it do for you?
It is a phenomenal organization. It connects you to other cheesemakers, so you realize that you're not the only one out there that, you know, things are happening to. So big piece of working with ACS is the food safety regulation piece of it, that they're able to help you, one, understand what kind of rules and regulations are coming down. They help you to implement some of those changes that you need to change, or if maybe this isn't such a great idea, they'll help you, like, as an organization, we can talk to our representatives and try to make things make more sense for the cheese manufacturers and not what makes sense on paper. Because, as we all know, those things don't necessarily meet eye to eye. So that's something for me as a cheesemaker that has been extremely beneficial. The contest in terms of meeting with buyers, so the entire conference itself really helps bring buyers and different cheesemongers and stuff through. And then the contest just helps build awareness and credibility behind the products and the brands. So
it's
going to
be exciting all around, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I forget how many thousands of cheeses are going to be on display that for sampling that Saturday night. I mean, something like 2,000 cheeses or something.
Yes, that's one of my favorite events. And when it was in Madison, it was really exciting because I was able to take my husband. And you absolutely cannot explain to anybody what this is like. They just have to experience it. Because everybody goes in like, I'm going to eat every piece of cheese here. Then they get through the first table and they're like, I can't eat any more cheese.
I know, it's like the specialty food show.
It really is. You have to be careful, you know, but I love it because then the other thing, the other side of that too is like, okay, what were these cheesemakers trying to accomplish? You know, and you really, and then you can compare it to their competition and see like, wow, this is really neat. Or if there's a cheese you're really interested in producing, you can learn about what other people are doing. You can talk to other people. You can, you know, really do a lot of homework. See if it's a product that people are even looking for. It's just, it's so important to have all those resources and at a level that people like understand your size too, because like you can't go and compete with the Saputos and the Foremost and those guys, you know, because they're at such a different level. But if you can talk to some of the more artists in places, they can really help you accomplish things that, and save you a lot of money probably, or they have, like for us, you know, that really helps you move forward as an organization.
Well, we're going to see you in Pittsburgh, I hope.
Yes, you will.
In just a few weeks' time. In the meantime, congratulations on a really delightful story, and I can't wait to taste some of your cheese.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes, we'll be at Meet the Cheesemaker, so please stop by and see us.
Great.
Absolutely, and in the meantime, keep that grass growing and those goats grazing, huh?
Will do, will do. Thank you very much, and thanks for thinking of us.
Thanks.
We appreciate that.
Thanks, Katie. Good talking to you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our final interview for today, after the music, is an interesting story because you wouldn't. This is a state you wouldn't think they make cheese in.
No, especially a little isolated corner of the state.
But it turns out they do, and it's a very interesting family story as well as a cheese story.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we get to talk to a lot of interesting people. The world is filling with interesting cheesemakers. We're going to be talking now to Veronica Beige. Veronica, there's such a huge expansion of people making cheese. It must be a great fraternity or sorority, whatever you'd like to call it, to be a part of.
Yeah, the American Cheese Society is a fantastic organization. We've been attending their conference every year since 2009. So it's full of all kinds of people that are involved in the cheese industry, whether they're cheese makers, whether they're professionals working behind a counter somewhere. You know, there's distributors there. They're buying and selling cheese. There's all kinds of folks that are involved. Some legislative folks come. We have the FDA regularly bring some information to share with us. So I mean, it's all about cheese and all about everyone that's part of the cheese industry.
Now, your company is Beige Farms Cheese. You're in Missouri.
That's correct.
Is that a big cheese making state?
Oh, no. Missouri is not a big cheese-making state at all. But it's a beautiful state, and it's a state that has a lot of farmland and grazing land. You know, we often think of Wisconsin as a cheese-making
state.
Yes, right. But, you know, Wisconsin's very fortunate that they've gotten a lot of state funding for promoting their cheeses. So they did a great job with commercialism. So yeah, it's but Missouri. We have several cheese companies here, and we're making some really good cheeses.
Now, did you start out in? You said you lived for a while in Illinois, was it?
Yeah, I lived a while in Illinois, but not very far away from Missouri. You know, it's just a neighboring state. So my husband and I would have spent some time over there, and that's where our love for goats began. We had a 60-acre farm over in a rural area in Illinois, and that's where we got our first goat.
Okay, so you started with one goat.
Yeah, we started with one goat in 1998 and making cheese in our kitchen. That's how we began, you know, and I realized how enjoyable it was, how much I really loved to work with the animals, and how much I just really was fascinated with the cheese-making process. So after that, we, you know, just continued to add on that experience. We started to, you know, of course, acquire more goats and experiment with, you know, various types of cheese. We started to include education into our, you know, education like at the University of Wisconsin and up at the University of Burlington, Vermont. They had a program up there. It was called the Vermont Institute of Artisan Cheese. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to attend that and take all their advanced cheese making courses. So, you know, it's been a long process. It's, you know, 20 years.
Oh, well, yeah. But you have a lot of ancillary activities as well. Tell us about some of those, like with your French cheese.
So we moved into an area of Missouri that is an amazing place. It's the area of St. Genevieve, which is the oldest town west of the Mississippi in all the United States. It was settled by the French. They came down from Quebec and settled here. And so I was really inspired when I started making cheese to make more French-style cheeses. And as I was doing that, I started a program with some high school exchange students. And so I started bringing over students, you know, just high school exchange. They go to the high school here. And one of my students was a French-speaking girl from Belgium. And so she and I would wake up before school, and I started calling over to France and started, you know, reaching out to the different dairy schools over there. And I formed a partnership with Enlive, which is in La Roche-sur-Foron. It's about 30 minutes outside of Geneva. And for the past 4 years, I've been bringing over interns. So that it's a cheese dairy science school, and they have to fulfill some obligation of internship in order to graduate from their program. So it's a great fit for us. And right now I have an intern with us that it's her actual third time coming back. So she's really valuable to me.
Oh, that's great. That's much fun for you, too.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. We always have young people, and I really enjoy just seeing America through their eyes. I've learned so much about our country and our culture and just everything. You know, it's funny because there's things that we grow up with and we don't pay attention to, and we just get used to that in our everyday life. And then here comes somebody from a foreign country, and they're like, what? Why are the trucks so big? Why are the roads so big?
You know?
Yeah, I mean, so I do two programs. I do high school exchange, which is just academic through the school, and then I do the internship program for our business. But I just had a delightful boy that was a high school exchange from Lebanon, and he was like, how come all your houses are made of wood? You know,
wow,
it's
funny.
it's things like that I don't know, that's how we do here. And then, you know, I get to learn about his country, and why would that stand out? Okay, now I understand, you know, so it's been really great. And of course that goes into food too. That's because that's really the connection, especially with the French students. So we've had really delightful experiences.
Well, now you have a lot of rewards under your belt. Maybe you should describe some of your prized cheeses.
So our Bloomsdale, that's the one that's won the most accolades of all the cheeses that we have created. It's we participate in another award event. It's called the World Cheese Awards, and that's held over in Europe.
Right. In England. Isn't it in England?
This year it's going to be in Norway. But
That's
the association that handles that is called the Guild of Fine Foods. mm-hmm. and that's based in the UK. So anyway, they usually have around 3,000 cheeses from about 38 countries, and there's about 50 that receive a Super Gold Award out of that, and our Bloomsdales received that 4 years in a row. So we're pretty thrilled with that.
Now, is that the one that won?
That's being pretty greedy. doesn't somebody else deserve a turn?
Yeah, well, there's 50 altogether. So, I mean,
okay.
it's pretty awesome that, you know, we've gotten that 4 years in a row. But when I was there the last year, they told me that they don't recall a company that's gotten that 4 years in a row for the same cheese, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Well, is that the one that came in first last year at the American Cheese Society judging?
So it's a pyramid type cheese that is similar to the Valencé that is found in the Loire Valley in France.
Uh-huh, right.
You know, it's made with goat milk, and then it has a combination of ash and salt rolled on the outside, and then it grows a bloomy rind. So it's really a delightful cheese, and we're thrilled to be making it and to have that kind of accolade. And we called it Bloomsdale because the town of Bloomsdale is where our farm is located. So it's a little town of about 525 people.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
So they're pretty thrilled that we chose that name for our cheese.
Oh, that's sweet. That's really wonderful.
Does Bloomsfield still have a post office?
I'm sorry.
Let me say that again. I said, does Bloomsfield still have a post office? Or?
Oh, no, we did. We did have a post office, but unfortunately they discontinued that, you know, and I was really disappointed about that.
Well, how did you end up in where you are? I mean, did you choose it, or the point to a dot on the map, or what? Or do you have family ties there or anything?
Yeah, we had some family ties to the area here. Mm-hmm. My family since passed away, but what brought us initially to the area, my family lives fairly close to where we are, and so we moved from Illinois back over to Missouri, and we're really happy to be back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, I'm intrigued by this cheese school, this dairy school thing. You said that they're obviously quite common in France. Do you ever see anything like that happening in the United States?
Well, I my hope is that it would. I mean, what I've experienced that's able to really correlate with the type of work we're doing was the VIAC school that came out of the University of Burlington, you know, the Vermont Institute of Artisan Cheese. That program is it doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
But it's kind of sad. But I'm really thankful that I was able to, you know, be there when it was in its zenith, and you know, it was several years of me going back and forth up to Vermont. They would bring teachers over from Europe, you know, that would expound on cheese making, and so I started to think about that. I started to think about the different people that came and the schools that they were from, and when I had that sweet girl from Belgium, I said, let's start making some phone calls, you know.
Yeah.
Because I really think that I could make some type of connection, because I really enjoy hosting, and I thought, why couldn't I do this for the business? Why couldn't I work on an internship program with the school? And that's what I did. So there's a number of dairy schools, dairy science schools in France that, you know, teach, you know, cheese making. So I went to two. I went to one in Pouligny. That would be in the Comté, you know, area where they're making Comté.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to the other school, which is the one that I get more students from, and that's the one in Roche-sur-Foron. And so they're making Raclette and Reblochon and Maubier in that area.
One of my favorite cheeses, the Maubier. Yes. And you make one like that too?
You know, I'm not sure if they make that or not. They they, you know, are really specific because they're AOC cheeses, you know.
Oh, yeah, right.
And so, you know, they can't, like here in the United States, you know, we can have the freedom to pretty much make whatever we want because we don't have that. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, they're making cheeses. They have to be really specific. The milk has to come from a certain breed of animal, and everything has to be very exact.
Right. Yeah, they're like that with certain wine brands, too.
Yeah, exactly.
We've met some people in California who left even family businesses in France because of the lack of freedom and going outside the lines. Yeah. So, well, listen, yeah. I wish you all the best of luck. And you know, the American Cheese Society contact was right. You are very interesting to talk to. And so I'm glad we got together, and I look forward to sampling your cheese.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and also, and keep up your contacts. I mean, it must make life much more exciting for you to have a bigger world to move in than a very small town. Although, I think you're a rural person by nature, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a more rural person by nature, but I enjoy venturing out into the city now and then. But I'm always happy to go back.
Yeah, right. Well, I look forward to yes, I wish you the best of luck in your awards. I think you're a born award winner as well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your compliments. And I'm excited to meet you. Maybe if I can meet you at the Festival of Cheese, maybe we could try our cheese together.
That'd be great. I'd love it.
Yeah.
Veronica, thank you for talking to us, too, because
yeah,
I know you're
you.
Busy. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Is there anything?
Okay, so we hope you enjoyed this week's program.
And you know, we'll have an
even more of a cheese enthusiast. What do you say?
I think that I wanted to say that this is not the end of it. We have a lot of winners that we wanted to present, some big-time winners, but they're caught up in a media maelstrom right now.
Media frenzy, I think.
But hold on, we'll get you more cheese stories coming up in the near future.
And there you have it. Until we visit cheese again, which Anne has promised we will do in the near future, not too distant future. And in the meantime, what do we say?
Bye-bye.